This is Scott.
This is Pat.
Hey, we got a great program lined up. We're going to talk, one, what do you do in this market if you got a big lump sum of cash to invest? We'll talk about that.
We're going to talk a little bit about why rental properties may make sense for your retirement portfolio.
Yeah, and actually, for some people, they can offer a great income source. But we're also going to talk about the importance of having multiple income sources in retirement. So you'll want to stick around. We got a great show this week. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters coming up right now.
Now, for the Financial Times ranked top investment advisor, Hanson McLean. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are here with us, both myself and my co-host. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our work days with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. So whether you're listening to us live, we're glad you are here with us, or maybe you're listening to us via podcast.
Many of the thousands, they have told us in our IT department that listen to us via the podcast.
You know, I actually ran into
I ran into
a woman at the gym this week who approached me and said she travels a lot for work and she likes to listen to our podcast when she's on the road. It gives her, she says, because she enjoys the program. She says it feels like she's connected to her hometown when she's on the road.
When she travels. Well,
and I said, would you leave me alone? I'm trying to work out. Get out of No, I didn't.
I was approached yesterday at a child's, what was he? Volleyball game. Got a bunch of children, but this was a volleyball game.
A bunch of children. You can't keep track of them. Well, I was like just, that meaning of life.
the lady walks up and says, Scott, I need to ask you a question. I said, well, I'm not Scott. I'm Pat. She said, oh, I'm sorry. I always get you guys confused.
And so, did she walk away?
She didn't have a question for me. All right. Actually, she it had nothing to do with finance. She wanted to know if we could drive her son somewhere. And kids play on the same team together.
Got it.
All right. There you go.
Where were you going to drive the kid?
I'm
just kidding.
Why is that relevant?
I'm just thinking as we're getting this relevant.
All right.
This is financial.
We talk about money.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a great program. And later in the program, we're going to talk about how to invest a lump sum in today's market. And what do we mean by this? Look, maybe you're about to retire or you've got a 401k to roll out, inherited some cash.
Maybe a settlement or a sale of a property.
How do you invest that now?
Yeah, if you had a big pile of cash, what do you do with it?
Today. In this market. We'll talk about that.
And then we're also going to talk a little bit about the practical tips that could save your retirement. And we're going to share three of these practical tips. And then once again, you'll be able to read them on our website.
And of course, take your calls. If you want to join the program, we're going to start off with calls here in just a moment. If you want to join us, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-242-6766. We'll get you onto the program. And we're going to start in Colorado Springs, Colorado, with Ruth. Ruth, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. My name is Ruth from Colorado Springs. Thank you so much for this opportunity that you've given me to be able to ask this question.
Oh, sure, our pleasure.
Yeah, how are you guys?
Wonderful, thank you. How can we help you today, Ruth?
Yeah, my question is, I have a rental property, but I already bought a house, which is, a retirement house for us. And I want to simplify our lives. Is it okay to, sell that rental property and just to have one house? Because some people are saying, hey, you need to keep that. That's for investment for the future and things like that. But, I can't think.
I really like this question.
I do too. I always got a kick out of it.
Because you actually started with the word simplify. It wasn't all about the money. We're financial guys. We could tell you exactly what to do with the money. But your objective is not only the money, it's to simplify.
Yes.
So with that in mind, let us ask you a couple questions. So what is the value of the rental property?
I will make money, I would say. I will make you know.
No, what, like, yeah, if you sold it today, would it sell for $200,000, $300,000, $400,000? How much would it sell for?
It could sell $260,000.
Okay. And do you owe any money on it?
Yes.
And how much do you owe on this property?
I would say $170,000.
And what did you pay for this property?
How much did they pay for it?
Yeah, how much
around
did you pay?
$200,000.
And what is the income or the rent that you charge on this property?
Actually, it's just $1,350, and they're telling me that I can rent that out for $1,600 now.
Okay, $1,600 a month.
Which is $1,350 currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but the fair market rent is probably $1,600 a month or $1,500 a month is the fair market rent. And tell us about you said you bought a house that you're living in now.
Yes.
Do you owe any money on this home?
Yeah, we put down some money, so we still have a little, you know.
How much do you owe on it? On the house you're living in now?
Oh, because this house is around 400, so it's less than
You owe about 200,000?
Yeah.
You owe 400 on
so
it.
So let me ask.
280.
280.
Yeah.
In the rental house.
Around 280, yep. Mm-hmm.
Did you live in the rental house before you bought this house?
Yes.
Okay.
Did.
When did
so
you?
I don't think I pay capital gain on that. When, I know that. You know,
when did you move out?
11, I believe.
We
bought it 2009 or 8, and then 11.
Okay. So here's the thing. In order to qualify for exemption of $250,000 capital gain. And actually, as a married couple, it could be $500,000 you can exclude from capital gain. That must have been your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you would have needed to sell this property within 3 years of vacating it.
And you moved out, you said, in 2011. So you would have had to have sold it by 2014. So if you were to sell this property today, you would pay capital gains tax. It would not be excluded from the capital gains as a primary residence. So that's the first answer. Yes, it would still have capital gains on it. So the first answer to your question is, does it simplify your life? How old are you?
40.
How old?
44.
Oh, 44. So you've got a ways, and your husband is of similar age?
What's that?
Is your husband of similar age?
No, he's a little bit younger. He's only 30, almost 40.
Oh, okay.
And will you have any pension at retirement?
Yeah, we're good with that. My husband is really on top of that. So he has a Vanguard and, you know, some kind of Apple and other stuff, IRAs, you know, diversified.
So
diversified
means. I would not sell this property. Scott,
I wouldn't either. Thoughts? I was thinking the same
I wouldn't
thing.
Sell this property.
If you were 70,
I might sell this
I'd say
property.
Sell the property.
But somewhere. You've got a long ways before retirement. You've got a good 16 years.
He will be retiring from military.
Oh, he's going to retire from the military, but he might not.
He will be.
Yeah, but how old will he be when he retires from the military?
Oh, 41.
Okay.
41, 42.
Okay. Yeah. You know, the life expectancy of a 41-year-old.
Is massive.
Is massive. Mm-hmm.
Whatever
fact,
it is, it's life.
I met this week with a 94-year-old client of mine. He's been retired for 37 years. He's 94. He's not going to retire. He's just leaving the military.
Here's what I like. Here's what we like about this, and I can speak for Pat because I know Pat would agree with me on this. So you've got a property now that has a mortgage, and I have a feeling that most of your rent is going to pay the mortgage. You're really not. It's not generating any real cash for you right now. But the day will
it
come.
Does. Yeah.
Okay, but it's not much.
Yeah, once you add in all the expenses. And,
but the day will come when this mortgage is paid off and the rent's going to go right to your bottom line.
And it's going to be more than $1,500
right,
a month.
That's right, because of inflation.
It could be $2,000, $3,000 a month in the next 20, 30 years.
With inflation.
With inflation. So while your husband actually is leaving the military after his 21 years, most people that leave the military at 41 don't retire. They retire from the military. The word retire means to never work again, to leave the workforce permanently. Your husband will not be
the
leaving the workforce permanently.
The risk of having some stress, you know.
So here's what.
You wouldn't know. I know I've been praying. It's been good. You know, God has been good to us.
Yes.
Because I've been praying for a good tenant. But there's sometimes, you know, you run into problems. And
here's what I would recommend.
I don't know. Simplified life.
Here's what I would recommend.
I wouldn't sell. You called and asked for our opinion. I would not sell this.
And I'm going to tell you how to simplify your life. Hire a property manager.
Hire a
real property manager that pays all of the bills. Have enough cash in their escrow account so that when there's a 2 or 3 month or 4 month period when there's no tenant, no one's calling and asking you for the cash.
Yeah, you want $10,000 in their working account. You want a property manager that it manages at least 300 what they call doors, which means units. You want someone that is qualified. When I owned residential real estate, I had a property manager.
I own some now. I have a property manager.
And you have a property manager. Oh, actually, we own one together. I forgot about that. We own one together.
That doesn't sound good, by the way.
I know, but I had forgotten about that.
For many reasons.
I had forgotten about that. So, you manage that for us. So
I don't manage anything.
But
I think of a couple of residents I have.
You look at the...
I have a home, a residential home outside of the state I reside.
And you have a property manager.
A property manager. I don't do it. I get an email once a month, and I look at them once a quarter.
It's a little bit more expensive. It's a little bit more expensive.
It'll simplify your life.
And it will simplify. And it's a good financial move for you, Ruth. So continue to pray, but buy a property manager or get a property manager.
Maybe we were the answer.
Uh-huh.
So, but hold on to this house. You're too young to simplify.
I would agree.
You're 44. Your husband.
Well, you can simplify by having a property manager.
That's one. But don't get rid of this property.
No, don't get rid of it.
Don't get rid of it. Hang on to it.
Okay. Too young to simplify.
And this is one of the rare
occasions. Simplify by hiring a property manager.
One of the rare occasions where the advice you're getting from your friends is good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. We wish you well, Ruth.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. You know, thank you, Ruth. You know, it's Pat, I cannot think of anyone who's held a residential property for a long period of time that wasn't happy they did.
Correct. But there's always a little bit of rough patches, even with a property manager.
Of course.
Manager does is make it a little bit easier on the day-to-day. You still need to have enough money set aside that if there is a long-term vacancy, you can continue to make the mortgage payments, or if there's some damage to the property, that you can make good on that.
But
But for these people, it makes perfect sense.
Moving in for as far as accumulating wealth, planning for retirement, ideally you get to retirement and you have multiple income sources. Like say, so the perfect retirement, or being at least at a stage in life where you could quit working if you wanted to, is being in a position where you've got multiple income sources and a diversified portfolio. And diversified is not just having stocks and bonds. It's also having something like a rental property that provides some income, maybe it's a commercial property, maybe it's even having a partnership interest with some other people on self-storage unit. I mean, there's a number of different things.
A 401k or an IRA or a Roth IRA. There's all kinds of different flows of income that can come into you for retirement. And quite frankly, I don't know if I would suggest that you buy a house in this environment. I don't think it's the best time to buy a rental property. I think that we're closer to the top than far closer to the top of this market than we are to the bottom.
Just because things are both on stock and real estate side.
In most asset classes. But I think that if you've got one and you're in there and you've got a long-term perspective, it's not a bad idea to hang on to it. Especially for Ruth. 44. By the 20 years from now, she could have the house paid off for. She's 64. Taking a monthly income off that?
Well, as you know, if you've been listening to the Hanson McClain's radio program for a while or have come in to talk this, we're a big fan of having mortgages be paid off at the time somebody retires, right?
Yes.
So ideally, if you're mid-40s and you've got a rental property or two, try to get those rental properties paid off by the time you retire.
All your mortgages paid off.
All, if you can,
because money not going out is exactly the same thing as money coming in.
Yeah.
Money not going out of your house is exactly the when I put solar on my house, the gentleman comes over and he's trying to tell me about all the, you know, everything about solar, why it's such a good thing. What did I do?
You asked if it was going to leak this first heavy winter you had.
Well, no, I didn't.
That's the question I should have asked, because right now my solar panels are off the roof tied up in the back of the yard. But that's another story entirely.
What the question you asked, I'm sure, which is, what's my return on investment? How soon will they pay for themselves? And then how soon will I actually start making money on this?
And having a rental property?
It's the same. There's no difference between solar panels and a rental property. Because the reason you put solar panels up there is so that you could lower your expenditures going out.
And I wanted to be part of the green team and lower the coal emissions.
Thank you. And that's a good thing, too.
All right. One, to join Hanson McLean, we'd love to take your call as well. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We're going to Ione, California, talking with Oral Custer. Oral, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you, and you've got quite the name for Oral Custer. I like it. That's why I said your last name. So.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. And Ione, what's the population of Ione?
Well, it depends upon whether you consider the incarcerated population.
All right, we bite. Tell us the population with the incarcerated and without the incarcerated.
I had a feeling this was going to be an interesting call.
Well, there's probably just under 4,000 in the community, but close to another about 3,800 in addition that are at Mule Creek Prison.
Yes, yes.
Mule Creek was expanded a couple of years ago, and an additional 1,500 are incarcerated there. So,
For those people outside of the Northern California area, Mule Creek is a California correctional facility.
That's correct.
In the Amador County, is that correct?
Yes.
Amador County, which, by the way, if you're outside the Northern California area, Amador County is the new Napa Valley in California.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It is turned into the up and coming wine.
Not if
country.
You're near the prison.
Well, you're right. And you don't work for the Chamber of Commerce, I'm sure.
I do not. I do not.
Okay.
Anyway, well, your question
you've
for
called
us.
Hanson McLean with a financial question.
So enough of the geography.
And the wine tax Napa Valley.
It is the next Napa Valley.
Well, I just had a little bit of a question about refinancing. We bought this home here in Ione in 2013 at a really good time. And we purchased 150. Now I understand value is right around 200 to 10 for this 1,500 square foot, three bedroom home on West Marlette.
Okay.
The thing of it is that I don't like paying PMI.
And what do you owe on the house?
133.
And what's the interest rate on the home?
It is 3.87.
And how old are you, Oral?
I'm past retirement age.
You're over age 65?
You told us.
You gave us your home address and your last name and the town you live in, but you're not going to tell us how old you are? This is vanity at its finest, my friend.
No, I'm 72. I retired two years ago at Mule Creek.
Oh, got it. And your wife?
She is she's about a year, just under a year younger than
and
I am.
And so you're getting a monthly pension from the state of California, I assume. And why do you have a mortgage at all? Did you have money to pay off the mortgage?
That's
a
good question.
Yeah.
Listening to what you said in the previous caller there, I thought, actually we should be out from under a more mortgage. That would have been better by this time. Our payments with PMI insurance and so forth, and we put a little bit additional to principal, are about 1180, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think for right around 1200, and I know that it could be much less if we didn't have the PMI also.
And so tell me, do you have money in a 401k or money outside of an IRA or?
No.
Okay.
I'm a professional. I have a private practice.
You know, Oral.
And so Yeah.
I'm going to say it.
What are you going to say?
I would either refinance it to get rid of that PMI, or I might even look at a reverse mortgage.
Well, it sounds like he's still working some today.
Yeah, so he probably doesn't need the
I'd get a new 30-year mortgage.
And not pay any extra on
it. That's correct.
Because you didn't get it paid off by the time you retired. So if you
might as well enjoy. Look, you're, who knows how many years you've got left, right? But you know you've got this year, right? We have today.
So why not?
Well, I retired, you know, at 70, and I look 50, according to CalPERS staff.
Uh-huh. who better to judge? No, yeah. But here's the idea. If you don't get the home paid off by the time you retire, then what you do is you manage for the largest cash flow possible, which is make the smallest payments possible on the home, or even get a reverse mortgage. You sound like you love life, right? You sound like you're having a great time. You're still working. You're engaged.
So I would say no reverse mortgage today.
I'd hold off on the reverse mortgage. You're a little young for it. And I agree with Scott. I'd refinance this into a new 30-year fixed rate. I'd drop the PMI and I'd make the lowest. I'd get a 40-year fixed rate if they would give it to you just to get the payments as low as possible.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I would do with this. And then I would just continue to be oral. I mean, I would just continue just to be who you are. And I think you'll have a great life. And we'll come and visit you out in Ione off of, what'd you say, Marlette? You're living on Marlette?
Yeah, it's West Marlette. We have a running team here. You should come out. And then they have the Ione homecoming and on the second weekend.
Is that the prisoners coming back?
Is that homecoming? Right?
No. They don't get out for that.
Okay. So Scott Hansen, who is seated to my right, is the big runner. He's I don't know if you've been a longtime listener, but he did the Western States 100 a couple years ago.
He's in pretty good health. Yeah,
he's in pretty good health. He lacks the kind of personality you have and the sort of vigor for life. But other than that, he's got great health. So anyway, we appreciate the call.
Yeah, glad you called, Earl. Wish you well. You know, how is it? Sometimes you just had a feeling that
he was just going to
be a...
it's probably not even his real name.
Entertaining caller. But,
Scott, the point being is if you don't get your home paid off by the time you retire, then maybe you take a completely different tactic and you manage for cash flow.
Well, I think oftentimes as we go through life, what might have been the right choice at one stage is not necessarily the right choice at the next stage. So you find yourself, look, early 70s, still in. I mean, the fact is, one day we're all going to die.
Yes.
And most likely we will have a period of illness before that.
That is.
Statistically
speaking, yes. That is what's going to happen.
And matter of fact, later on in the program, we've got a great guest, Paula Spann, who's a... She writes for the New York Times on people dealing with aging parents and what you kind of do if you're at this, maybe you're transitioning to retirement, suddenly you've got an aging parent to deal with. So we've got her on later in the program. You want to be part of that. But the point with this is sometimes we get to a point when we're young and saving for retirement, we're saving for this future time in our life, right? That we're all anticipating it's going to be there.
With expectations and dreams about what it's going to look like.
Yes. And then we're there. And it's funny, as a financial advisor's job, our job is to make sure that people's financial resources will last them through their dying day. That's a big part of it. A lot of times people come to us and they want to make sure, they come and see a Hansen McLean advisor, they want to make sure that their money's going to last them the rest of their life. But we've also seen, Pat, a number of times where plans change. Suddenly a spouse gets ill, a spouse passes away.
And with that, your financial plan changes.
And those retirement dreams change as well.
Yeah, new expectations.
So the reason we are proponents of once you're retired is instead of worrying about trying to get that home paid off, you're 72 years old, instead of trying to get the home paid off, let's manage it so that is the smallest payment possible.
So that you can enjoy as much as you possibly can, if that's appropriate. And it's not always appropriate. But anyway, Scott, we had promised earlier in the show that we'd talk a little bit about what to do if you come into a lump sum. And we're not going to actually get to that right now. We're going to get to that on the other side of the break. But I did want to cover the three tips that could save your retirement. And this is on our website, HansenMcLean.com. HansenMcLean.com if you want to go look this up. The first thing is slash your investment risk. Understand what risk you have in your portfolios. And we do a stress test on our clients' portfolios to understand.
But now's not the time. You're going into retirement. Now's not the time to be taking on big risks.
The second is don't let your mortgage payment drown you. It's what we just talked about. That's why I brought these three tips up.
It's redundant.
And then smooth your inflation risk, which is make sure that you actually have an expectation that inflation will occur in the future and then how to manage that. So there's more of these tips on our website, HansenMcLean.com.
Yes, and I also want to remind the listeners in the Denver area or the Bay Area that we've got workshops coming up this week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Wednesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. in the evening, Saturday at 11:15. And for complete details, all you got to do is go to HansenMcLean.com. There's no charge for the workshop. Just have a good attitude when you show up. That's all we ask. And not really. You can have a bad
attitude.
Just keep your mouth shut.
But we'd love it to yourself.
Love to see you at the workshop. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean.
Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Thanks for sticking around. And by the way, we're going to continue calls here in a moment after we have this other fantastic segment. But to join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And I'd like to take your call.
Yeah. Or you can always visit us at HansonMcLean.com as well.
Yes, but you're not going to be able to.
You can't talk to us via the website.
Not unless we hooked up like a Skype thing or something.
Well, we don't need to get into the technology.
I don't know how the technology even works.
Well, you'd have to ask the CIA. They'll tell you how it all works.
Oh, gosh. WikiLeaks.
Or anyone else that reads WikiLeaks. They'll tell you how it all works.
Anyway. Yeah. So we mentioned at the beginning of the program, what do you do in today's market if you have a lump sum to invest? Right? So let's say that you are retiring today. You've got your 401k to invest somewhere. Maybe you have received an inheritance. Maybe you're just about to go through a divorce and receiving a settlement.
Maybe you sold a house or a piece of property has been sold. And what do you do with those proceeds?
Yeah.
And it's a difficult time.
Nothing seems... By the way, it's always difficult. So it's difficult now because most things appear expensive.
Scott, you and I think that. Do you believe the average consumer thinks that most things look expensive?
Not by if you look at where money flows. If you look at, it's been the retail investor, the individual investor that's been driving up, putting more money into the stock market.
And not only the stock market, commercial and residential real estate, although we started to see some softening in residential and commercial real estate.
In the fact of what you get for your dollar.
So
what that dollar gets you.
From a technical financial view, our view of the world, things are not cheap right now. They're more expensive than they have been in years, measuring by the simplest price to earnings ratio.
Lots of different things.
Yes, but the simplest.
If you go to McDonald's and for a dollar you can get two Big Macs yesterday, and today you go into a dollar and you get only a small hamburger,
then you know things are relatively more expensive.
That's what it feels like in the investment market.
There
so
we go.
For every dollar you have to invest somewhere, you are getting less and less today than you did 2 years ago, 5 years ago.
So if you come across a sum of money to invest,
why it's always
what do you do?
It's always difficult because when things are cheap, it's only because prices have recently fallen appear scary.
Your emotional outlook is probably more guarded.
So in 2009, by the way, this last week we just hit 9 years.
9 years, I'm sorry.
What's the...
No, 8-year bull run.
Yeah, 8 years, thank you. You were correct. 2009, it was March 6th as we had an intraday low of the S&P 500, hit 666. Interesting. On March 6th of 2009. So we've had this run since this period of time.
Scott,
things were cheap then, but no one who wanted to invest in March 2009. Scott, yes.
In terms of bull markets,
very long one.
Second, third, fourth?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Long one.
Yeah.
So back to the question. I come into a sum of money. How do I invest it?
It's really based upon what it is you're trying to accomplish with long-term objectives. What is your risk tolerance? How much up and down can you withstand? And when are you going to need these dollars?
But even in all that, I still would come in at a couple risk levels below what you would normally.
I would agree with that.
Right?
You can always increase.
If your risk tolerance is moderate, you might want to be moderately conservative in this investment, in this environment. If your risk tolerance is aggressive normally, you might want to be, you know, more to a growth or growth in income style rather than aggressive growth. And a good advisor, if you're sitting down with a good advisor, they will actually help you understand what your normal risk tolerance is through lots of different methods. How you reacted in different markets, how you felt about things. Maybe some quantitative testing of your risk tolerance will help you to better understand what your investment style should be. And it is not easy in this marketplace to bring in a lump sum of money. It's just a time to be cautious. When the world of the investment markets look optimistic, you just want to be a little bit more pessimistic.
The more rosy things look, usually...
Yeah, and when the investments market look pessimistic, you want to be a little bit more optimistic.
And we've got just this last week, there was something in the report that was some online company that does grocery delivery. Grocery delivery business, and had a valuation of...
$3.5 billion. And it was reminiscent of 1998. And Webvan, right? So I was talking to some people that worked in their office. They said, 1998. I said, what? Were you in the third grade? And she said, yeah, I was eight.
Right? I guessed it, yeah.
So she's not going to remember, right? A lot of new investors aren't. I feel like the old man now, but a lot of new investors aren't going to remember.
1999. Yeah. That's right.
But it felt like 98.
But those going into retirement certainly do.
Yes, they do.
Not as much as those who just retired the year 1999. They will never forget.
They will never forget.
All right, let's go to the phones here. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. In 1-888-2-HANSEN, we're in Denver, Colorado, talking with Ann. Ann, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Ann.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
I have a question for you. I am wondering, should I pay off my house of $120,000? Using money from my investments versus continuing to save. I'm 2 years into a 30-year loan of $142,000.
Okay.
And the house is worth $450,000. I'm 55 years old, and I don't want a loan, of course, when I retire, which I'm planning on in about 7 years.
Okay. And how much did you say you had in investments?
Total, several different accounts, 401k, Roth. I have about over $750,000.
And any of those investments outside of a retirement plan or a qualified plan, like in a brokerage account or in bank savings accounts or something along those lines?
I have an individual account. I also have a HSA.
Okay. How much is in the individual account?
Over $100,000.
And how's that invested?
How's that invested?
That's through my financial planner, and I'm not exactly sure.
Did you ask your financial planner this question?
I did.
And what did he or she say?
And he said no.
Just flat out no.
Yeah. He said, leave everything where it is. He said the money you would be making on your investments is greater than the amount of money you would save by paying off your house.
What's the interest rate on your home?
4.1.
So he doesn't know that, by the way. He just hopes that. Mm. Right? He doesn't know whether your return is to be greater than 4.1% or not. He hopes that. And the second thing is, I don't know if he or she is quite listening to what your objectives are. So if you were sitting in my office or an office of any one of the advisors at Hanson McLean, and you said, I want to retire in 7 years, I might take a two-pronged approach. I might take some of that money out of that after-tax account, right? So that's what we asked about, how much you have in that brokerage account. What did you say that number was?
Assuming you can get it without a lot of tax consequences.
It's over 100,000.
Okay.
So it's probably about 109,000.
Okay. So assuming there weren't a lot of tax complications in getting to those dollars and how they were invested, I might do a combination of things. I might take part of that money and pay down a portion of your mortgage and then re-amortize your payments on your mortgage so the house is paid off in 7 years on the date you wish to retire. So what that means is I might say, look.
You might. This is exactly how.
All right. This is what I would do. I would actually look.
Exactly the plan.
I would look to see what the house payments that you are making now and figure out how to keep those the same so the house is paid off in 7 years. And we might take $50,000 from the brokerage account, apply it against the mortgage immediately, and then make the payment so that the day you retire, the home is paid for. Because the objective is to retire without a mortgage. So when you're,
and I wouldn't want to just hope for that.
And I wouldn't hope for it. And I wouldn't be as confident with the as your advisor is to say that your money is going to do better than 4.1%. Is it probable? Yes, it's probable that some of your account will do better than 4.1%.
But you can look at a 7-year period during the financial crisis where things didn't do better than 4.1%.
And I promise you I could look at your portfolio and find probably out of the 750,000, I could probably find 150,000 or 200,000 that is yielding,
you know, it's not gonna
well below 4.1% in any fixed income.
Right.
So the answer to your question is, yes, pay down the mortgage, but do it in two steps, and you're going to have to actually do the math. Now, I'm going to do a shameless promotion on Scott's book. In fact, we're going to send it to her. Can we send it? We're going to send you Scott's book.
Stick on after, well, after we're done.
Yeah, we're going to send you Scott's book. It's called Decision Points, the 7 Steps You Need to Take. Is that the name of the book?
Something
it's
like
called
that,
Decision
yeah.
Points. Also,
personal decision points.
I have workshops. We have workshops in Denver next week where we're actually going through the 7 personal decision points.
And we go through an example of someone about your same
age. We go through an example with someone about your same, a couple years older than you, but almost exactly that, which was how do we actually pay off the mortgage prior to retirement? And I love the confidence of your advisor. I'm just not that confident. And it forgets what your objectives are. If your objective is to pay off the mortgage, then my objective should be to help you pay off the mortgage and to do it in the right way.
Okay.
So I would encourage you to go to HansenMcLean.com and look for, we have 3 workshops in the next couple of weeks in Denver to come and visit us.
And at a minimum, read my book. It'll give you kind of an idea about how, and you're in great shape. I mean,
you're fine. You're financially, you'll be fine.
And maybe you've got the greatest financial advisor in the world.
Maybe
disagree.
Yeah,
that,
maybe so. Just on this one little issue. But financially, you'll be fine. You just want to make sure that your objectives and your financial objectives are one and the same.
That's right.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay.
All right, Ann.
Appreciate it.
We wish you luck.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. And you know, Pat, this is one of those times there can be conflicts of interest, even with fee-based advisors, because most fee-based advisors get compensated based upon money under their care. So money that's removed from accounts and that is
that are used to pay down mortgage
is less money that that advisor manages. But that's just being a little cynical. Anyway, let's Pat. It's one thing that has been interesting over the years as we've worked with clients is a lot of them, they go into retirement and at the same time they're going into retirement, they've got aging parents to deal with.
Oh, the sandwich generation, right? You're taking care of kids and you're taking care of parents.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people that we've noticed, they've planned for the retirement. Everything's all set to go. And just at the time they're transitioning retirement, they've got both financial issues to deal with aging parents.
Emotional and family. So you've not only got teenagers or kids in college or they're young adults, but now you've got a parent or a couple parents that are aging either at home or in a board and care or a facility, and you've got those financial responsibilities, and going through it myself right now, it's dealing with my brothers and sisters and how we're going to care for
because your
dad.
Father's in a
board and care. Fortunately, a board and care. He was in a nursing home, but now he's in a board and care.
What's the difference?
It's the level of care and the environment that you're in, and it's a big difference.
And your sister even specializes in this, right? She's
she works at a placement agency for nursing care, nursing home.
Anyway, we've noticed it's been an impact, big impact for many of our clients, and actually
in my life
and Pat as well. And so we've got a great guest with us today, Paula Spann. Paula is a veteran journalist with the New York Times. She's been written a column called New Old Age. She's also the author of the book, When the Time Comes, Families with Aging Parents Share Their Struggles and Solutions. And she's clearly an expert in this whole situation. So, Paula, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Hi, happy to be with you.
Yeah, really appreciate the time.
And by the way, I got to tell you, I'm probably to the right of center, but I do love the New York Times. I look forward to it every Sunday.
Well, I appreciate
it. It is
that.
A daily publication. You know that, Pat.
Yeah.
No, I read.
There are six other days.
I read it. I read it every day, but Sunday is what I actually really look forward to, the Sunday magazine.
Sunday's kind of a pleasure, yeah.
It is, it is.
Well, it's actually still a real-size paper.
Oh, yes, yes. And
yes,
so, Paula, how long have you been writing about this particular subject, about aging and families and parents, and how do you struggle with those?
We're coming up to like 8 or 9 years now. The New Old Age started as a blog in 2008, and now it's a column twice a month. So I've been on this beat for a while, plus I did that book. And it just happens because once you hit your 50s, you probably found this, all the people that you bump into at the grocery store or the, you know, the game or in town where you live, who used to be talking to you about their kids and PSATs and soccer and so forth, suddenly they're all dealing with their parents. It's this generational thing that we're seldom ready for. So that's how I kind of got into it. I don't have a professional background. It just was in the wind.
And it is difficult. I mean, financially and more importantly, emotionally.
It's difficult in every way because unlike some countries, in our country, this is seen as a family responsibility. Yes, there is Medicare for doctors and hospitals, and there's Medicaid if you're very poor. But for things like, as you have discovered, you know, for board and care, for assisted living, for trying to bring in help in the home, it's on you. Baby, it's you.
And when do you find that most people need to start preparing for elderly parents? Is it kind of when it just suddenly shows up? Or?
Yeah, I think most of the time there's some kind of crisis that makes you talk about the things that nobody really wanted to talk about. So, you know, sometimes you get the call. Like, you know, your mother fell and she broke her hip. Your father had a stroke. Or sometimes you go home for Thanksgiving and you see that they are not doing well. There's not enough food in the refrigerator. They've been telling you on the phone for weeks and months that everything is fine, and you get there and it's not fine. So you're at a situation where something has to be done. Nobody likes to look at disability and decline, and we'd like to think, especially since people do live much longer, we'd like to think that they're just going to chug along forever in their houses and be fine, and that would be nice. But the fact is, two-thirds of older people need some kind of help with long-term care, meaning hands-on help with things like taking a shower, getting dressed, preparing a meal. Most of us are going to need help with this.
Hey, Paula,
not ready for it.
When I remember when I was younger, much younger, my great grandparents lived with my grandparents, and I think was that cultural that used to take place. And if things change, and is it based on the culture? I was talking to some friends that were Hispanic the other day, and they said absolutely their parents are going to live with them. Is that
true? I think there are these cultural differences in elder care. So yes, the multi-generational household is more common among Hispanic families and also Asian families. But in the U.S., for the local native population, what really changed it was 70 years ago when Social Security made it possible for people to live independently. Before that, everybody had to take their parents in or live with their parents because when you couldn't work, you couldn't eat. But once there was some kind of retirement benefit, then people... You can see this in census data. The number of multi-generational families declined very sharply, and it's still not very high. And people are always talking about how we're going to go back to the multi-generational family. I think if you're not of an ethnic group where that is normative, it can happen, but it's not going to be the norm, I don't think.
You know, it's interesting. unintended consequences, something like Social Security. But what do you find some of the biggest challenges for people outside the financial aspects?
Well, I think one big issue is that nobody wants to feel dependent and acknowledge that you need help. So I hear all the time from adult children whose biggest problem is that their parents are telling them that they're fine, they don't need anything, and they can see that there's a problem. So getting people to accept help is difficult. Nobody wants to move. People want to stay in their houses forever, and some of the houses can be adapted for that. You know, you put in enough grab bars and ramps, and they can stay, or some are not. And people are living sometimes in houses that are enormous for their, you know, a single person living in a four-bedroom house with stairs. It's, you know, a prescription for disaster, but nobody wants to move. So there's that. And then there's the fact that the medical system is very fragmented, so lots of times older people have multiple health problems, not just one, and their doctors don't talk to each other. They don't really coordinate care.
It's not like a real caretaker. Helps. There's no one really responsible for their well-being, it seems like. Every specialist has their own view of the world,
right.
And one doctor prescribes
geriatricians. I like geriatricians for that because, geriatricians take care of old people like pediatricians take care of young people. They do have that holistic stance. But if you have a cardiologist, a neurologist, an internist, or somebody else who's doing physical therapy, they might not be talking to each other at all.
Yeah,
that falls to the family also. You're the care coordinator along with everything else.
So when I went through this, and actually going through it, we went through every stage of what you just described. There was a fall and a broken hip, and then there was some time in the hospital, then in a nursing home, and then back to the home, and then back to a nursing home, and then in care, and then finally board in care. And it was cumbersome. And the biggest problem was, fortunately, I come from a large family. There's five children, and we were able to break up the responsibilities, right? One person drives them to the doctors and kind of manages medical care. But
good on you. Yeah.
Oh, that
you're not at each other's throats all the time.
Well,
that can happen too.
Yeah. Well, at least the Irish were smart enough to have big families. One of the things that we ran into was fraud, where people were actually got a hold of either bank accounts or credit card statements. We had no idea who they were. We know they weren't family, but we know someone got. Is that common?
Yeah, it is actually. These kind of financial scams and fraud of elder people, because a lot of older people have accumulated some assets, and then they begin to have problems just cognitively keeping up with all of the statements, the expenditures, looking at the accounts. It's actually kind of demanding for all of us. And when people are in that vulnerable situation, or they're away from home, or they're in a nursing home, there are these scammers that move in and hackers and can do a lot of damage before they are discovered. So that's another thing for family members is if you have somebody who's faltering, who's spending a lot of time in hospitals and nursing homes, who's having some memory problems, some judgment problems, you probably want to take the steps to be a co-signer or to take over at least paying the bills electronically, so that you can see what's coming in and what's coming out, because they can be easy marks, and it's enraging.
That is exactly what we found, and the only way I actually could fix the whole thing was to take my father's ability to manage any of his money away from him.
We're talking with Paula Spann here on Hanson McLean. She is the New York Times columnist, New Old Age, and also author of the book, When the Time Comes, Families with Aging Parents Share Their Struggles and Solutions. And of course, the link you can find at hansonmclean.com. But Paula, walk us through. So, you know, it's interesting. So we're a financial advisory firm. We have thousands of clients that we serve. And most people are fairly responsible in their life. So they save for their retirement. They come to people like us to help them navigate this stage of life. What would you say somebody should do in their, let's say, 50s or 60s, plan their own in regards to dealing with aging parents?
Right. Well, as you pointed out, this is not only a financial issue, it's a family dynamic issue, and it's tricky. So nothing that anyone, including me, tells you will work for everybody. But I would suggest having conversations with your parents before there is a need, when they're still fine and they're managing their own affairs, to appeal to the sense of independence that most people want to continue to have by saying, Mom, Dad, tell us what you would want us to do as you get older, when the time comes, not if the time comes. You know, if you have a fall, if you have a stroke, if you're having trouble, where do you want to be? Do you want to stay in the home? Well, then why don't we call these people, these occupational therapists, you know, that to come and do a survey of the home and see what we need to do to make it safer for you. Do you want to stay in your town, but you could use a smaller place? Why don't we do that before there's a crisis? Let's talk about your finances. I know you don't like talking about money, but if you are, you know, in an ICU and we need to pay your rent, we need to have a healthcare proxy. Someone, you know, these are legal documents everyone should have, regardless of age. You know, if you're in your 40s, you should have it too. So it's not about lack of dependence. Who do you want to be your healthcare proxy and to make these decisions for your healthcare? Who do you want to have your power of attorney who can take care of your finances if you're incapacitated for a while? Where do you want to be? If you're a very congenial, outgoing person, you might not want to be alone in your house with a homemaker who comes for 4 hours a day. It's very isolating. Maybe you'd rather be in a community with other people and activities and transportation, or maybe that sounds like your idea of hell and you want to be in the home, so then we have to fix up the home. But we need direction from you. We will be making decisions for you. We don't want to be fighting with each other about what you would want. Please help us plan this for you. I think that might be the way to go, and I say that knowing that some people will say, What do you mean? We're fine. It's not a conversation. It's multiple conversations over a period of time. And I think if you say, look, I've got my healthcare proxy. I've got my power of attorney. It's so funny that people will do this for their assets. Everybody's got a will. Everybody's thought about what they're going to do with their money after they die. It's before you die when you need help that's a hard thing to navigate.
Yeah. And that's for most people, that's just the power of attorney.
Yeah. And I think for most people, it's hard for them to even, no one wants to think about that stage of life themselves. I think there's a sense of denial going on too. So, hey, Paula, I certainly appreciate you taking some time to be with us. And again, Paula Spann is a columnist for the New York Times, and you can find her column, New Old Age, at newyorktimes.com, of course. And her book, also, you can get a link to that at our website. Just go to hansmclain.com. And you'll see everything about Paula Spann. So again, Paula, thanks for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, that music means that we are out of time. I'm so sad it's the end of the program. Hey, I want to remind you, if you're in the Denver area or the Bay Area, we've got workshops this week. Personal Decision Points, your 7 steps to your ideal retirement transition. You'll want to come. Go to HansonMcLain.com for all the details. We'll see you this week. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. And tune in to Hanson McLain's Money Matters next weekend. Have a great rest of the weekend.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLain Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.